Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 4 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 award-winning, or not award-winning, award-losing film, but one of the best ones ever.
It's won awards.
Yes. Not at the time. Shawshank Redemption, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Lewitt of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Welcome back once again, Jay.
Thank you. It must have won something at the time. Not necessarily Oscars, but it must have won something.
I don't know. It's a good question.
No, it didn't win any Golden Globes.
Was it nominated for Golden Globes? I don't even remember
that. It was nominated for two, but didn't win. I'm just saying, there's so many awards out there.
In 1995,
I guess these days there's quite a lot.
Okay, well, Roger Deakins won Best Cinematographer in 95.
There we go. See,
from the ASC, the American Society of Cinematographers. So, okay, there is one award that it won at the time.
Award-winning.
Yeah. Well, Roger Deakins also won Best Cinematography at the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association Award. What else? The Heartland International Film Festival gave this movie the Studio Crystal Heart Award.
Darabont got the Humanitas Prize in the feature film category.
The best
foreign film in the Japanese.
Japanese Academy. It was one of the top 10 films for the National Board of Review. But at least at that point, you know, somebody knew that this movie, has something going for it.
Award-winning film. Good.
Yeah, it won the USC Scripter Award for both Stephen King and Frank Darabont. All the others are like small little things. Theoretically, it won the award Circuit Community Award for Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Cinematography. Won both of those. Okay. Even in the 2020 awards, it didn't do well. It won just Best Cinematography and Best Adapted Screenplay in 2020 awards, which 2020 awards basically is awards, you know, that when you look back.
Hindsight, yeah.
Which, okay. Oh, well. So, yes, it is an award-winning film, but not an Oscar award-winning film. How's that?
There we go.
Right. So, minute four begins with the DA continuing his questioning and ends with the DA having a very interesting query for Andy. So yesterday we talked a lot about Jeffrey DeMunn questioning Andy, and he got caught off mid-sentence. He started saying the man you, he was talking about Glenn Quinton, and he continues now with saying the man you recently discovered was your wife's lover. And then once again, we see the couple continuing to get undressed. Now, did you look up who the actors are who play these two characters?
Did. Scott Mann and Renee Blaine, both of whom have one acting credit to their names, which is a little film called The Shawshank Redemption. Scott Mann, his entire IMDb biography is Scott Mann is known for The Shawshank Redemption. Whereas Renee Blaine goes a bit more into her modeling career and all of the traveling shit modeling that involved her to win the part of Linda Dufresne. Who knew she was called Linda? She's not credited as Linda. She's credited as Andy Dufresne's wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you have to get into
They haven't been a lot else. She's also did some extra work in Walker, Texas Ranger and Born on the 4th of July, apparently, but she's not credited for those.
Right. And She, I guess, did a good enough job that they wanted to give her this role.
Sure, yeah. I mean, she fits the bill. She's not in it a lot.
Right. I mean, in the novella by Stephen King, it does mention the name Linda 13 times.
Okay.
You know.
There we go. Times and there were bullets.
Right. It says the facts of the prosecutor's case that Andy never contested were these: that he had a wife, Linda Collins Dufresne, that in June of 1947, she had expressed an interest in in learning the game of golf at the Falmouth Hills Country Club, that she didn't take lessons for 4 months, that her instructor was Falmouth Hills golf pro Glenn Quinton, that in late August of 1947, Andy Learn and Quinton and his wife had become lovers, that Andy and Linda Dufresne argued bitterly on the afternoon of the 10th of September 1947, and that the subject of their argument was her infidelity. He testified that Linda professed to be glad he knew the sneaking around, she said, was distressing. She told Andy that she planned to obtain a Reno divorce. Andy told her he would see her in hell before he would see her in Reno. She wanted to spend the night with Quentin in Quentin's rented bungalow, not far from the golf course. And I won't continue reading because we don't want to talk about the cleaning lady yet. But yeah, that's so you see, I guess that means that Renee actually read the novel.
Perhaps, yes. Yeah, because I think she wrote her own IMDb mini biography because it's credited as being by
By
me
me, yes.
on there. Yeah. I love when actors write their own biographies on IMDb. Some of them are very complimentary of themselves, shall we say. Some of the ones you go into.
Well, come on, everyone's
Hey, why not?
given
Yeah.
information about their life. Yeah.
You gotta blow your own trumpet.
Because it ends there with her saying that she's a proud mother of three and a proud grandmother, which is fine too.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, hey, that's grandma on screen. You know, that could be a little discerning for a young kid to notice that their
Don't
grandmother.
think you'd see enough of her to recognize her. I think the kids are gonna be okay.
I hope so. I hope so. Because that could be a little traumatizing. That was my grandma. Then the DA asks, "Did you follow her?" And he goes, "I went to a few bars first. Later, I drove to the house."
Oh, Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
This
They weren't home.
is why I think
I parked and
this
drove.
is why I think he's like defending himself. Because when there's not it was not this line when he comes like, and then you killed her. If he had a defender, the defender would be like, objection, objection. I think he might have objected to
Again, I
that
was going to bring that point up shortly. The fact that there is—we don't hear the defense attorney at all. You know, I know that later on, you know, Hayward says, Laura fucked me, but still, that's pretty much the idea here. That
I mean,
this
he
is
could be talking about
the
the DA.
that's true, also.
It's in the lawyer, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't really help his case here.
No,
Not at
certainly
all.
doesn't. Yeah.
Right. And he goes, they
Did you
weren't home.
follow up? Yeah, I got drunk first, then I followed.
That's right. And they weren't home. So I talked to the turnout and waited. And then we get two more credits on screen, one for Paul McCrane and one for Jude Ciccolella. That's how you pronounce it. I never know how to pronounce his name. Now, I'm sure you know who Paul McCrane is, don't you?
Certainly do. Dr. Rocket Romano
That's right.
from ER, of course.
One armed
Yep,
Rocket
gets
Romano.
a helicopter lands on him. Spoiler for ER. And also the guy from RoboCop,
That's right.
the first time where I first saw Paul McCrane as the guy from RoboCop with the greatest death in cinema history.
Yes. I've told the story
Love when
before,
Paul
but
McCrane crops up and stuff. I had no idea he was in this. When we were watching it the other night, as opening credits, like, wait, Paul McCrane's in this? And I kept an eye out for him. I was like, hey, there he is.
he has a very, very small part also. I've always loved him. I mean, again, I'm just shocked that Rocket Romano was in 126 episodes of ER. I mean, that's
Sure,
just
he's a main
wow.
character, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And back to what we were saying before, he was also in From the Earth to the Moon, played Pete Conrad. Did a great job of that one. But here he plays Guard Trout. That's his character's name. I've told this story before about what I used to how I used to watch RoboCop with a good friend of mine. We would watch it and watching these certain scenes in slow motion, and his death scene was one of the ones we watched in slow motion.
Sure, yeah, makes
As
sense.
a 13 or 14 year old, it was It was interesting to watch things like that. And he was also in Fame, the original movie Fame. He played
I haven't
Montgomery.
seen that.
Yes.
And apparently in Rocky 2. So good.
That too. Rocky 2 too. And Jude Cicalella. I think he was also in, well, he was in 24. He played Mike Novick in 59 episodes. But for some reason, I keep thinking he was also in The Sopranos. I don't remember why.
He was in one episode of ER, along with Paul McCrane, who Paul McCrane was also in a few episodes of 24. So it's all connected. So hope they had a little reunion on set. Hey, we were girls together. Hey, we were up on that roof.
Yeah, no, I don't see that he was in The Sopranos. I don't know why I have that in my head that he was in Sopranos. He's not.
He's been in a
Oh
lot.
well. Yeah. He has a lot of credits. He's 108 credits on IMDb. And he was actually also in Archer Nemesis.
Sure, Sin City.
And he plays Guard Mert.
Major Mika
And
and Ross.
yeah. And as Andy is telling his story, we once again see Andy not easily trying to put the bullets in the gun. You know, we see that he's shaking a little too much, not able to really do it. And then DA goes, with what intention? And then we get on screen another credit, the end credit with James Whitmore
Yeah.
Jr., which it's always nice seeing him in this movie or any movie that he's in. You know, my
I
favorite.
never had the. Haven't got the junior. I've got James Whitmore.
Okay, well, he. Wait, is James Whitmore Jr. his son? Maybe his son is James Whitmore Jr.
That makes sense. I think he's just James Whitmore.
Right, I'm sorry. He's James Whitmore. His son is James Whitmore Jr., who is also an actor and a director. So, yeah. Okay, I got that wrong. My favorite movie with him is when he played Truman, like not the Truman Show, Harry Truman.
No, yeah.
He did a one-man show for many years, and then they filmed it, and it is, you know, I love the trivia fact that it is the only time that there is a movie with one person in it, and he got nominated for an Oscar, you know, for
Nice.
best actor for it. So that's
My favorite film with him in it is The Shawshank Redemption, in which he
I
plays
don't think I've
Brooks.
ever heard of it.
The saddest character, the saddest scene. Love this guy, love his performance. Such a great face.
Yeah, the movie that I was talking about is called Give 'Em Hell, Harry, which is great. He was also in Battleground, which we talked a lot about last season, and I actually just recently saw it, and it's also a great movie. And he was nominated for an Oscar for that movie. Playing the sergeant, where they're the middle of Bastogne, Bastogne.
He's also in
And
them with the giant ants.
yes, he is. That was a really weird movie. I saw that recently, also a few months ago. And he was also in The Majestic. Surprise,
Sure.
surprise. You know, Frank Darabont saying, "Hey, you know what? Maybe I'll give him a part. Why don't I do that?
Why not?
Why
Why
don't
not,
I give
indeed?
James? Why don't I give James Whitmore a little bit of a shot here? Why not?" And Andy then, you know, responds, and he has a strange look on his face, and he goes, I'm not sure. I was confused, drunk. I think mostly I wanted to scare them." And then the DA goes, "When they arrived, you went up to the house and murdered them."
Objection.
He goes, "No, I was sobering up. I got back in the car and I drove home to sleep it off." Now, when he was putting the bullets in there, he's, I believe, putting too many bullets into the gun. You know, I'd have to go back and look, you know, how many bullets a Colt
He's drunk.
detective, but he has eight bullets in front of him, which would sort of,
Well,
you know, change the
you can
plot.
see there's six cavities in the gun. that you can see in one of the shots early on in this minute.
Okay, but he has 8 bullets in his hand.
But to, right, but I don't think they will end up in the gun.
Well, apparently not.
Like when he opens the door, when he opens the door next week, or t next
Are
week,
people that
tomorrow, I
fall
don't
on the ground?
know. Yeah. And they talk about like they found on the ground empty bottle of bourbon and bullets with his fingerprints on
Correct. And he goes, "No, I was sobering up. I got back in the car and I drove home to sleep it off." And as he's saying that, we get a another on-screen credit of Deborah Aquila, who is the casting director, who apparently likes to work with Frank Darabont. Why not? And she was the casting director in a lot of movies. She has 199 credits on IMDb, including La La Land, Coda, Primal Fear, obviously Shawshank. So yeah, she knows how to get a very good cast here and put them together. I mean, again, this movie has a great cast, no question about that.
Yeah, and it's a lot of faces. Like it's
Yes.
not there's a lot of people in it. Not all of them have like prominent roles, but still the background is packed with good faces. It's a believable 1940s 50s prison, I think. It's not like a cast of models. The cast of faces.
And Andy continues and goes, "Along the way, I stopped and I threw my gun in the Royal River." Are you familiar with any other movies that discuss the Royal River?
No, and I meant to look up the Royal River, but I forgot.
Okay, it is a
Where
real
is the
river.
Royal River?
It's a real river in Maine, in southern Maine. It's the I believe it's the river that they take the train tracks across in Stand By Me. I mean, they do go across the Royal River. Maybe. It is possible that the kid who was killed was near the Royal River, but they do discuss the Royal River there. It is a 39-mile, 63-kilometer long river in southern Maine, and you know that it's funny. You have the map. You can find a map on Wikipedia. You know, that tells you where the river goes, and it goes through all these fictional towns. Yeah, so it's mentioned in Salem's Lot also. And it's mentioned here. These are the three that are mentioned in this article of the Royal River, which again, I always love the connections between various Stephen King novels. And you get it in, I mean, this is a there's four novellas in the collection, Different Seasons, which is, you know, the first one is Ray Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption. The second one is Apt Pupil, and in Apt Pupil, the main character talks about the fact that he used to use this banker up in Maine who got sent to Shawshank for killing his wife. You know, it's just like a passing note along the way. So
Sure.
it's nice
Yeah.
the various connections along the way. And then he goes, "I feel I've been very clear on this point," which is really, really a strange thing to say when you're in the middle of court, you know.
He's setting up the DA to come back with, "Well, where I get hazy." Yeah, with that great Jeffrey DeMunn
That's
delivery.
right. He starts screaming. He goes, "Well, where I
Starts
get
yelling
hazy
at him.
is when the cleaning lady woman shows up the following morning and finds your wife in bed with her lover, riddled with 38 caliber bullets. Now, does that strike you as a fantastic coincidence, Mr. Dufresne?" And then he gets cut off as the minute ends, and we also get the on-screen credit of music by Thomas Newman, who does a great score here, and you know. Once again, I neglected to do this on the first episode, but I want to once again thank David Brooks for doing the music, both the intro and outro music of this season, and you know, giving us some great Shawshank music to begin and end every episode with. So thank you very much again for that,
I
David.
look forward to David's music being the first thing I listen to for the next 6 months of my life. Every day.
Well, it could be worse, right?
This is not a complaint at all.
Right. Okay. And that's how this minute ends. So, Jay, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
I did not. We covered it. I just, my the note I had written down was hazy in capital letters. I just hazy.
Well, apparently, Glenn Clinton was pretty well off that he has a cleaning woman come in, in the mornings after he, has his little dalliance.
I mean, they said that his the place he rents is near the golf club in the book, so maybe he's like, it's part of the package included. He like works for the golf club, so they like have lodgings there for the instructors, and that's just part of the package deal, would be my
And
guess.
that's where you can go have your affairs.
Sure, yeah. In the love shack.
There you go. Okay, so today's segment is Andy Do Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Tim Robbins performances. So, Jay, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I will take all the credit for naming this segment.
And you get all that. The credit is all yours.
Tim Robbins, an actor that I've not seen as many things as I have Morgan Freeman. I actually I have I've probably seen like a dozen maybe, but some of his bigger sort of stuff I haven't seen. Jacob's Ladder. I've had it on DVD for like years, like decades probably, and I've never like, yeah, I'll watch that tonight. So I haven't watched that yet. I meant to watch it before today, but I didn't. So there we are. I watched Reanimator instead, which doesn't got him in it, but it's great. My number five, Tim Robbins film. Not a film I particularly like, but Mystic River, he has a great performance in. It's not a fun film. I don't enjoy watching Mystic River. It's a bad time, but he's excellent in it. He's, yeah. Number four, very small role, but I love that he's part of Anchorman. I know you're not a fan of Anchorman, but Tim Robbins just crops up as one of the other newsreaders in the big newsroom newsreader brawl, and he has the line when Ben Stiller shows up speaking Spanish. Tim Robbins is like, "Looks like we got ourselves a bilingual blood fest," which is just a line that's stuck in my head. And he's got a crazy wig, and he's got like a his mouth, I think, is like stuffed out with stuff. It's a fun little role. It's silly. Number three, I'm gonna put High Fidelity. He's Ray. He's the Glenn Quentin of High Fidelity. He's the guy that John Cusack's partner has moved on to. And he's not in it a lot, but he is just an awful person when he is in it. He's not a nice guy, easy to hate. And there's like a multiple dream sequence scene where Cusack and his buddies, Jack Black again, just keep beating him up. That's fun. Number two, I'm gonna put The Shawshank Redemption. For reasons already stated, he's very good at it. He's excellent. He's playing a character who you just think, this guy, I don't like this guy. This guy could be he. I know you know people in real life who are like this guy, but you don't like him. There's people who are like, they're cold, they're a bit standoffish, they seem to know everything and rejoice in informing you on how much they know, and you just kind of hate them for it. But I think Tim Robbins walks that line of like being a know-it-all, being a guy who's not very easy to talk to, not very personable. But you see him be like a nice guy. The fact that he helps out Tommy, the fact that he's generally friendly, or isn't mean to people unless they're mean people. That I think is what more people in real life need to do instead. And he just does it so well. He's very good. And my number one is my favorite Coen Brothers film, which is The Hudsucker Proxy. I love The Hudsucker Proxy. I love him in The Hudsucker Proxy. It's a real fun time, and I love it so much. That's my number one.
All
A Muncie Girl.
right.
You know, for kids.
Okay. Excellent. All right, now we will play the first of two daily games, Name That Book Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what Jay gets this time. Okay, this movie's original title was Infernal Affairs from 2006.
The Departed.
That is correct.
Because the original movie was called Infernal Affairs.
Correct.
So, yeah, I didn't know it was a book.
That's what I got on the list. Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, sure. Hey, I'll take it.
You know, again, I always have to give a little caveat here, but it's possible that when accumulating these lists, there are mistakes here and there. But The Departed's original title was definitely Infernal Affairs.
Sure.
All right, now we'll play the second daily game of High Low. Let's spin the wheel for your first of three. Okay, the 2012 movie Argo.
I've seen this one. I like this one a lot. Argo's great. Oh, I'm gonna say IMDb. It's good. I really like it, but I'm gonna guess a lot of people don't think it's like incredible. So I'm gonna have it hanging around 7.9.
7.7, very close, very close.
Okay. And
All right.
Rotten Tomatoes for the same reason. Let's go with an 86.
96.
96. Okay. I'm happy about that. I think Argo doesn't get discussed as much as it should. It's an excellent film.
Okay. That's understandable. All right. Let's spin the wheel again for your next one. Okay, the 2014 movie Boyhood.
Less good than Argo. I'm gonna say it's tricky. I would rate this one lower. I think I gave it a 7 out of 10 when I reviewed it. I haven't felt compelled to go back. So I'll stick with that. Let's go with everyone agrees with me. Let's say a 7.0.
7.9.
Okay, well, and then for Rotten Tomatoes. I think people appreciate the way it was made. They got a lot of people said like, "Oh, it's a gimmick," and it kind of is. But reviewers, 93,
97. I'm actually shocked that that's
97,
very close.
too high,
Yeah,
too high.
I think so too.
Yeah,
All right,
I
so
should think later. Not my
spin the wheel
favorite.
for let's spin the wheel for your final one today. Round and around and around the wheel there. Ooh, Jim's gonna like this one. Apollo 13 from
Okay,
1995.
fantastic film. Perfect film. So IMDb should be a 10 out of 10, but we know it's not. So let's go with 8.9.
It's actually only a 7.7, which is very shocking
That
to me.
sucks.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's wrong. People suck. Rotten Tomatoes, this should be 100, but let's go with 98.
96.
Too low.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I mean, I'm
What do
surprised.
people have against Apollo 13?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean,
Wonderful film.
just as a reference, so Braveheart on IMDb has an 8.3, and on Rotten Tomatoes has a 79. So
I mean, I'm fine with that having a low score on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not a big Braveheart.
Well, I do like Braveheart a lot, but I still think Apollo 13 is so much better.
It is.
I think
I've seen
Apollo 13
Braveheart
should be.
once.
Okay,
That's
I've seen it
fine.
a few more than
But
once. A few more times.
I've seen it once and I'm good. I got no desires to watch Braveheart a second time. Apollo 13, I'll watch a 30th time happily.
Didn't we discuss
Braveheart.
before
We're solving problems.
that you're not a fan of space movies?
Yes, well no, I don't need any more. I think it's what I've said before. Like, what, you had that period where, like, First Man and Ad Astra came around. I was like, I'm done with these. I don't need any more of these. But Apollo 13, I love. Interstellar, I freaking love Interstellar. But yeah, that's it. I don't need more than that. I've got those two. That's all I want. I need Apollo 13. I need Interstellar. I need Armageddon. That's the 3 points of my space movie triangle. I don't need any more space movies.
Okay. I can understand that. All right. Excellent. So Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Oh, no one wants to find me now, not after that. But Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is where you can find me talking about Deep Blue Sea and films similar to it. And my personal site is lifeversusfilm.com, where I occasionally write reviews, rarely about space films. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.